is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the rest of the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Would you like to talk with Zorba? Here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Zorba, always some interesting research to pass along during the hour.
Yes, very interesting study looking at anger and aerobic fitness, that is lung capacity, the other aspect of aerobic fitness. You've got heart capacity and lung capacity. Can it alter it? And the DEA has a warning on soft drink cough syrup mixes. People, young children, adolescents, young adults are making a mixture of cough syrup and soda and drinking it down.
Okay, this cough syrup thing has been going on for a while.
Been going on for a long time, but it's got a new twist on it. And the question is, what do we do?
Yeah. What's our recipe?
Louise. It's a recipe from Louise. It's called Mushroom Lunch.
That would be Louise Butler of Spokane, Washington. That's coming up soon. We have a medical myth buster, too, so you'll want to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, a listener with us now in Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. How can we help you?
Well, my wife and I took up Bikram yoga, better known as hot yoga, 90 minutes in a 105-degree room, a couple months ago, and I went 17 days straight in sessions.
Wait a minute. 90 minutes in a how hot a room?
105 degrees.
Did you violate some law and this is your punishment?
You know, it's certainly the most demanding thing I've done since my time in the military.
Yeah.
But you certainly feel like you've accomplished quite a bit, except for the fact that
That's like banging your head against the wall because it feels so good when you stop, isn't it?
It is. That's how you feel about 30 minutes into the class.
Okay, anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt. What's your question for Zorba?
Well, a few days after that 17-day session, I was on a business trip staying with family and in bed and noticed my bottom was real itchy.
Hmm.
Well, I got home a few days later and my wife said, you have a rash on your butt. And I said, I don't know what that's from. And I did a little research on the internet and I found that sweating, hot heat temperatures and stuff can bring on eczema. So I waited a month. It went away after about a week. And just recently I attended again for once a week, the last 2 weeks, and the rash has reappeared.
Right,
and it's
right.
Peripheral to where it originally was. Originally it was right there on the cheeks. Now it kind of showed up peripheral to that, but it's just kind of a blotchy rash that initially the itch is there, and then the onset of the rash.
Now, who discovered this rash? Your wife discovered this rash, right?
She
noticed it. She said, honey, you've got a rash on your butt.
Exactly.
Is that what she said?
That's exactly it.
I mean, because on the whole, we don't tend to look at our butts. I mean, that's just not a common thing, I got to tell you, to go and look at your butts. Although people do look at them when they itch or scratch. First of all, that yoga is a very popular form of yoga, Bikram yoga, very popular. He's become very successful with this idea that you do it in a hot room, that it's a yoga session. He's copyrighted and identified it. It's all over the country. We've got two places in Madison that actually have that yoga, and it's become a different method of yoga because it's, the way the training is and the way the heat is. And a lot of people are introduced to yoga on this method and like it a lot. And the issue, of course, is sweating. You know, you're in a hot room, you sweat more, and that's the issue that you have. And it's not the sweating, it's the moisture. It's the moisture that will tend to bring on the rash. And the way to take care of that moisture is actually before and after, to make sure that you dry that area. So when you go there, when you leave, what do? I mean, you suit up. You know, obviously you're in different clothes.
I'm only about 3 blocks away. It's conveniently located, so I just ride bike home and jump in the shower.
What you want to do is make sure that you dry yourself out and powder yourself with baby powder, cornstarch, talcum powder, anything that will basically absorb the moisture will usually take care of this. That's what I would do.
Wouldn't it help to take the shower, if he could, before he got on the bike and rode home?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily make a difference. It's not the shower, it's the dryness. So the other issue, and that's a good point, Tom.
But I mean, you're actually, all sweaty when you got on the
bike. It's just the moisture. It's the moisture that's there. It doesn't matter if it's sweat or from water. That's what causes the rash. It's really the moisture that's there. So the other option, and you bring up a good point, is you bring a towel with you, and before you get on your bike or before you do that, you actually dry yourself off with that. And the sooner you dry yourself off, the better off you're going to be. Finally, if that fails, call your doctor. There are steroid creams that are very effective that work for this. You use it when it starts to pop up for a day or two to get rid of it. But I would continue with the yoga. I think it's a great form of yoga. It's a great introduction to it. You just have to dry off that butt so your wife doesn't notice that rash and say, honey, you got a rash on your butt.
Yeah, absolutely. So the location of the rash, is it just vary per person or something?
Well, it's usually in areas of moisture. So often, athlete's foot, which is a rash, a fungal rash, grows between the toes because of moisture. And eczema or eczemoid-like reactions, it doesn't necessarily bring on eczema. You have to have that predisposition. Once again, it's usually just a moisture issue for many people. Dry yourself off. You will be better.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Appreciate the call. Why? I would just stay out of the 105-degree
yoga. That's
it.
You would just stop doing that yoga, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean,
what if you felt good, though? What if you felt like you accomplished something with the yoga? With a little rash keep you from doing it?
1-800-462-7413. A listener now in Morristown, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi. How are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
I've been doing martial arts for a little over 2 years. And I keep injuring my knees, and I was hoping you guys could tell me how to prevent that.
Do you do the martial arts in a 105-degree room?
No.
Good for you.
Tell me a little bit more about this. Huh? You injure your knee, meaning what are you doing? What is it? First of all, how much time are you spending a week?
I do it every day for about an hour and a half.
Oh, so you do it for quite a long time. What kind of knee pain do you have when you have this knee pain? Tell me a bit about it.
It's like on the inner part of my knee, like towards the lower part.
So you do this 5 days a week? How many days a week are you doing this?
7 days a week.
7 days a week. Okay, 7 days a week is a lot to do it. Now, what about when you go on vacation? You're not doing martial arts. What happens to your knee?
I don't really go on vacation often. And like sometimes I'll go away on weekends, and I still practice on the weekend.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you do like kia and kick a board or something?
No.
Oh. I'm just asking.
You know, you're still stuck in that Karate Kid movie. You know, that was two decades. That was 2 decades ago. Martial arts is broader than kicking and breaking bricks and boards. Broader than that. Well, you know, you've got a couple of issues here. First of all, you may have an overuse issue. That is most likely what it is. Mm-hmm. But you also have an issue of giving your body a rest. And sometimes that's all you need. It may be that 7 days a week with a workout is simply too much for the ligaments, for the joints, for the muscles of your body. And that's not an unusual thing. If you look at weightlifters, you know, they often do upper body one day, they do lower body another day. And that,
right.
I think that's a rather important issue. It might be that just a one-day rest a week is going to make a huge difference in your martial arts, and you do other things. You know, you could do upper body and not do knee martial arts if you wanted to do that. But I think 7 days a week, 365 days a year, that's a lot of wear and tear on the body. Do you do anything else besides martial arts? You know, we've been talking about yoga, which is really another form, a total different form for your body. Have you ever done any yoga at all?
No, I haven't. I know it's like stretching, and I do stretch a lot.
What I would do if I were you is I would consider yoga as something I would do if you want to do something 7 days a week. And a lot of people do want to exercise 7 days a week. I'm not one of them, but there are a lot of people who want to do it 7 days a week. If you want to do it, I would do another form of exercise. And what would be ideal for you would be yoga, because you're doing something with your body that's completely different and is not this very powerful, you know, the sudden changes in your body that occur with martial arts. But you need a rest. You got to give your body a rest. That's the problem.
Is that knee keeping you away from the black belt?
No.
You have a black belt?
No, not yet. It takes a long time and a lot of discipline to get to black belt level.
What color do you have?
Oh, I have blue.
Blue.
It's only two away from black.
Yeah, that's a lot. You've been working at this for a long time, haven't you?
Yes. Practice hard. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck on the belts.
Yeah, good luck.
When you get good the good news is, when you get that black belt, you won't have to do it anymore.
No.
You'll have gotten to the penultimate, and you can...
There
you
go.
No. No. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's talk about anger and the lungs.
Right. Very, very interesting article. First of all, I've been very interested in anger. I'm not an angry person, but we know that anger and hostility lead to heart attack and stroke. We know that. It's it's well documented that when you yell at somebody in an angry way, it's completely different than when you yell at a football team and they've made a touchdown. And they'll, you know, if you look at somebody visually, they may actually look exactly the same. Red in the face, jumping up and down, but it's a different thing. And it basically enhances different internal hormones in the body. One is flight or fright, and the other one is happiness, which occurs in the brain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One is a totally negative, and the other
is totally,
totally
positive.
Positive.
And you may look physically the same, but when you're done with your angry outbreak, people don't feel very good. When you're done with your happy outbreak because they start a touchdown, you do feel good. They feel completely differently. So this was a long-term study for a variety of reasons. Started in 1986. Nearly 700 men, 21 to 80, asked about their hostility, and they had pulmonary function tests within about a year of completing the questionnaire, and then they were tracked for over 8 years, and they had comprehensive examinations, including pulmonary function tests, for 3 to 5 years. And they looked at pulmonary function tests. You know, how much aerobic capacity do you have in your lungs? Mm-hmm. Remember, when you look at aerobics, it's how your heart beats, and it's how your lung responds. After they controlled for age, weight, height, smoking status, other variables such as hypertension, diabetes, and so on, they discovered that hostile men had a reduction in pulmonary function over a period of time.
That's pretty interesting.
Totally interesting. And I'll tell you why for another reason.
Yeah.
Pulmonary function also correlates with longevity. If you have less pulmonary function, it's one of the risk factors for dying sooner. It's a totally separate thing from how you are on a treadmill. In other words, you lose pulmonary capacity as you get older and older, and the more capacity you lose, the more likely you are to die of a heart attack and stroke.
I wonder why that would happen, why anger would... cause
what's a good
pulmonary
question?
That's
a very good question. We know that anger causes stroke and heart attacks because it elucidates these negative hormones, flight or fright, within the body of adrenaline. And it may be that these hormones have an adverse effect on the lungs. Maybe that's what they do. We know that it causes an adverse effect on clotting. You're more likely to clot, have a clot in your brain or a clot in your heart, and that's what causes these heart attacks and strokes. But I don't know. I mean, it's a big issue. But it also shows you that being angry, which is treatable, is something that you should treat. Angry outbursts can be treated effectively with antidepressant medications and antidepressant counseling. In other words, you don't have to be angry for their whole life. You can actually treat this, and this shows that you lose pulmonary function. It's another reason to go and get help if you are an angry person.
We'll find out if this study works if our technical director, Brad Kohlberg, has lung trouble.
Old angry Brad there.
Now he's really angry.
You know, he is about the most mellow person that I know.
He takes it out on the drums.
Exactly. He's the drum guy. He's the drum boy.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener in Richmond, Virginia with us now. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I've been suffering from chronic sinusitis for about 3 years now. I've been on antibiotics as long as about 2 months, antibiotics and steroids. As soon as I'm done taking my course of antibiotics, the sinusitis returns. I've had CAT scans. I've had allergy testing. In terms of the CAT scans, everything comes out completely normal. And I also had come from a toxic mold-ridden home. And I find that when I'm in moldy areas, it seems to return, and it's a problem. I'm completely at my wit's end.
Right, you're suffering.
I'm clearly suffering. Very much.
Medicines that you've used, you've had what sort of medicines? You've had antibiotics, I'm sure, repeatedly.
I mean, I've been on Bactrim and Levaquin.
Right, lots of different antibiotics.
Nasal
sprays, you've used steroid nasal sprays?
Yes, absolutely.
That hasn't done much at all?
Not at all.
And you've used a neti pot?
I've been irrigating with amphotericin.
But a neti pot is, are these little, they look like an Aladdin lamp, and they're really an old-fashioned remedy where you put liquid, which is a salt solution, usually in your nose, and one side comes out on the other side and clears it out. Have you done that?
I use something called an irrigation. Yes, I've done something similar to that, not exactly.
Okay,
that.
But you've irrigated. You put liquid in your nose and clean out the back of your nose and your sinuses on a regular basis. Are you married?
I am.
Mm-hmm. How's your relationship with your husband?
What's that got to do with it?
I'm asking. I'm the doctor. I get to ask anything.
Well, he's sick of seeing me sick all the time.
But you love him. You love each other. You love each other.
Yes.
No, I mention that for an important reason. Mm-hmm. People who have chronic problems sometimes have chronic social issues, and they intermix. The social issues may cause the chronic problems, and the chronic problems may cause the social issues, but they certainly interact with each other. And having a supportive environment is part of trying to get yourself better in something like this. And that's why I was asking. It wasn't just willy-nilly asking for that. So what brought it on? What started it? Any
the house.
I believe it was my toxic mold-ridden home.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Where are you living now? Are you living in a different house, different apartment?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've moved 10 times to try and find...
10 different times.
In the last 3 years?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find a, environmentally, friendly house, and I can feel the mold when I'm in different environments.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on my face. My face gets swollen. My eyes get watery. Mm-hmm.
Now, have you gone to an environmental allergist? They're called clinical ecologists. They're different than allergists.
Yeah, no.
They're called clinical ecologists. They're a very specialized, rarefied group of doctors. They're not a lot around.
Mm-hmm.
They often practice integrative medicine, which is a combination of complementary and alternative medicine and Western medicine, which is clearly what you need because Western medicine has not given all of your answers.
Right.
They often will look at a house. They give recommendations on bedding. They give recommendations on what you should have in the house. They talk about ions, charged particles in the house, and they work on the fringy stuff of Western medicine, and they're often highly, highly astute in how to mix traditional, complementary, and alternative medicine with Western medicine, and that's what I would recommend. That's what you need.
That's what
you need. You need a full evaluation for that, and if you have trouble finding us, send me an email. I'll give you some recommendations.
Yeah. Good luck with it, and thank you very much for the call. Want to talk with Zorba? 800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, I think I hear the sirens of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health grammar police, but this time, don't worry.
I had Miss Schutte when I was a child. Miss Schutte was the spelling police. Now I've got the grammar police.
No, this time they're here to help. Not long ago, you wanted to know.
They're always here to help. All these grammarians, these public radio grammarians.
Yeah, but sometimes they're really a pain. Yep. No, not this time. Just kidding, painful grammarians.
Sorry, listeners.
You wanted to know the origin of the word caboose. Remember
yes.
that? And I didn't know
That's
either.
Right. Okay. That's right.
Well, you put the call out to listeners, and given that it's public radio, it was only a matter of time before we got a response.
Just seconds.
The explanation comes to us from Andy in Northport, Michigan. This is interesting. Andy says, the word caboose comes from the Dutch word kabinhoes. It was used to describe the superstructure of their naval ships. It was the British.
Wow.
It was the Brits who like to shorten words any chance they get that changed it to caboose.
Wow.
This time describing the kitchen area of their naval ships. The U.S. borrowed it by 1862, and it then found its way into the train language. Because what's one of the things that's in the caboose on the train?
Kitchens.
The kitchen area.
Yes.
The kitchen.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting? It goes from a naval ship superstructure to a naval ship kitchen to a train car that has the kitchen in it.
I love it.
Well,
thank you.
Your calls and emails are the engine that drives the Zorba Pastor on Your Health train, so make sure to email us your comments, tips, and grammar corrections, too.
Zorba at WPR.org.
More of your calls, a really yummy recipe from a listener.
It's a great one.
And a medical myth buster. Oh, and some more research, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Do you have a question for Zorba? We'll call 800-462-7413, and I'll bet you Zorba can help you out. We have some interesting research coming up and our medical myth buster, but right now it's recipe time. This one sounds like a goodie from Louise Butler in Spokane, Washington, who coincidentally happens to be with us on the phone right now. Hi, Louise.
Hi there.
Louise. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for submitting the recipe. I said it looks yummy. I'm not a big mushroom fan, but the other stuff in there looks really good.
Right. I, on the other hand, am a great big mushroom fan. In fact, in the springtime, we make shiitake mushrooms. We grow shiitake mushrooms in dead logs, and I love all different kinds of mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
How'd you come up with this one?
Well, I had some mushrooms, and a friend of mine actually brought me some lovely basil that she had just grown in her garden and chopped off for me. And I had this great, wonderful tomato from one of Spokane's wonderful farmers markets, and I was hungry.
And that was it.
That was it.
The recipe was born, hatched.
That's
exactly,
right.
Exactly.
We're going to go through the ingredients, and you jump in and help us out whenever you want to, okay?
Anytime you want to.
Okay.
How many people does this one feed?
If it's only what you're eating, I would say two or three. If it's something you're going to have on the side as your vegetable dish, I would say more like four.
Like four people.
Okay, let's do it.
That's great. Start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Yeah, I love extra virgin olive oil. I always look for good different types. They really do taste differently. As I mentioned, I like to buy mine now on the web, and I buy them in stores. But olive oil, nothing beats good olive oil. Mm-hmm. So 6 cups of big mushrooms cut into chunks.
Nothing beats olive oil. Good olive oil.
I love good olive oil.
I can think of a whole 160.
Sorry. Anyway, chocolate.
Six cups of big mushrooms, fresh, sliced into chunks. Okay.
I'm talking about from a food point of view.
Oh, okay.
Let's get through the recipe.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of, do you use traditional mushrooms or other mushrooms? What do you tend to use?
Well, I had that day was traditional mushrooms, but they were big ones.
Yeah. So you can use that. You could use portobello mushrooms. Mm-hmm. You could use shiitakes. As I said, we always have lots of shiitakes around the spring and the summertime.
Half a cup of fresh basil chopped.
Now, where do you get your basil off season?
I don't.
Well, I'll tell you where I get my basil now. At Asian grocery stores. And it is cheap. It is inexpensive. It's totally different. Traditionally, at regular grocery stores, it's very expensive. You know, you get a little package for $2. Asian grocery stores often have basil next to cilantro, so it's just a good tip when you're shopping for things.
Oh, thank you.
That's what I'd recommend. 7 artichoke hearts drained and cut into pieces.
7 artichoke hearts drained and cut into pieces. Okay, do you get your cheap artichoke hearts?
I get them at the grocery store.
Go ahead, Louise.
I get a great big jar of them at Costco.
Yeah, that's a good way to get it.
Have to be 7. It could be 6. It could be 8.
That's right. Right. A big jar that you keep there in the refrigerator. Now,
that's right.
Now, the next thing is a teaspoon of your favorite seasoning. We've got some. You prepare your own seasoning in some way, or what kind of seasoning do you use?
I do. I'm not a salt and pepper type of person, especially not salt, but I have a container that I've mixed a whole bunch of things that I really like, and I use it. So I've got like white pepper, tarragon,
wow,
oregano,
great idea,
marjoram,
great
thyme,
idea,
sage, etc.
Great idea. You know,
I like.
I love the idea. And I've got to mention, one of my favorite cookbooks was from Chef Louis in Chicago, who had a famous bakery called The Bakery, famous restaurant and bakery called The Bakery. And he would have made up a seasoning with a little salt and white pepper and a bunch of other things. And we always traditionally make our turkey with that. I've never thought about taking the seasoning that we love that has about 10 different things in it and simply using it in things like a mushroom lunch. It's a great idea that we can enable ourselves to make our own seasoning is a wonderful idea.
Well, it saves a lot of time, too. You're not standing there opening 18
yeah,
jars.
Right, and you just put it in one container. Okay, one tomato, softball-sized diced, a softball-sized tomato. How big is the softball?
Well, everybody knows how big a softball is.
That's a big
Zorba
tomato.
Doesn't know anything about balls or sports.
Yeah.
About this big.
Yeah, big softball.
A big tomato.
And perfectly ripe.
That's right. So 2 tablespoonfuls of roasted seeds. Tell me a bit about this. You roast the seeds yourself, and... Well, how do you make it?
Well, I start with a dry cast iron skillet and heat it up quite high.
Got it.
And throw in about half a cup, maybe a third of a cup of pumpkin seeds to start with, because they're the biggest seed.
Sure, they're a big seed. Okay.
And stir them up. And then when they start getting brown, throw in the same amount of sunflower seeds.
Okay.
They're the medium-sized seeds. They're stir them up.
Okay.
Then I proceed with the last seeds, the sesame seeds. And when they're all done,
I take
them off the heat and pour over them about maybe a third of a cup of or less of tamari or soy sauce.
Yeah, tamari is good soy sauce.
You just stir it up quickly so that it all gets coated because it evaporates quickly. Mm-hmm. And there's steam that comes up, so you have to watch out for that. But basically, then you can have these seeds around the house for as long as they last.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. Seeds also have omega-3 fatty acids in them, just as nuts, nuts and seeds, so they're good for you. They're a caloric-dense food that is a good caloric-dense food, for instance, versus, we'll say, lard, which is a good example of a bad caloric-dense food. But, I like to compare that. This is a good thing to have, a wonderful thing that adds taste to it. Mm-hmm. And once again, this is you don't like salt. I happen to like salt, but you're using no salt in this. And this is a great way for people who have to restrict their salt.
Oh, good idea.
And once again, if you want a little salt, I would add some kosher salt to this if I wanted to make it. But frankly, this will be salty from the tamari, so this will be great.
That's right.
Which is good. 4 cups of lettuce.
4 cups of lettuce. Where do you get the cheapest lettuce?
Lettuce that's chopped up. You're never going to let me forget this. There's a difference in basil. It's very expensive at the grocery store. It's very expensive. I'm always shopping for bargains. I am always shopping for bargains. 4 cups of lettuce. Romaine, is that what do you use? What kind of lettuce?
Well, that day I used iceberg.
Okay, so it's whatever you have. And 4 tablespoons of fat-free ranch salad dressing, so a traditional one. And freshly grated Parmesan cheese, Romano cheese, whatever you want to have. Freshly grated always tastes better than the stuff in the jar. Mm-hmm. So, as you mentioned, heat the cast iron skillet, add the mushrooms and basil in a cast iron skillet. Stir when the mushrooms are nearly cooked. It doesn't take that much time. Then add in the artichoke hearts, the seasonings, the tomato, and the roasted seeds. Turn off the heat. Stir it well. So basically, you're just warming up the other stuff. Then line each soup bowl with lettuce. Drizzle the ranch dressing on. Not a lot, because even though it's fat-free, you don't have to have a lot of that. You want to use the other stuff that you have in here, which essentially is your favorite seasoning and the roasted seeds. Scoop in the warm mushroom mixture. Oh, I'm starved. Into the lettuce. Top it with some fresh Parmesan, just a little bit, and serve it. This is a dynamite recipe.
Thank you.
It's a dynamite recipe. I love it.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For sending us this winning recipe, Louise gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Or get it on the web at ZorbaPastor.org. And if reading this recipe isn't enough, check out a podcast of this segment at the iTunes Music Store.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Sandpoint, Idaho. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
What's up?
You know, I was recently in Italy with my husband. We were there for 2 weeks, and we ate, like Italians, copious amounts of food with two-hour-long meals, lots of wine. We walked a great deal, and when we got back, we'd lost 9 pounds after 2 weeks of eating and drinking like this. And one of the things that occurred to me was that I never saw anything with high fructose corn syrup in it. There were no soft drinks being drunk by, you know, the Romans or the Florentines or the Venetians. And I wondered what Zorba could tell us about his thoughts on high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite interesting. The Italians don't drink as much, and they're pushing the Italians to try to drink more. In Europe, they drink the least amount of soft drinks. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because they use, seriously, both of their hands when they're gesticulating and talking. That's part of the theory. They can't hold something because they've got to use both hands when they're talking,
when they move.
That's exactly it. So, I mean, if you start talking like an Italian, you lose weight because you won't have something in your hand. The other issue is it's really such a different culture, like you say. It's a long lunch. Can you imagine taking 2 hours of lunch at work? They think you died or something.
They close the shops from 2 to 5.
They close the shops and they go back at work and they do a little bit of work in the evening. Now, you're right also about processed foods. We buy them because we have to work so hard. They don't buy them because they shop at their local grocery store, and that's part of their day. And that may be part of the reason that they have fewer heart attacks, because they're not rushing from one place to another. And we've got to get our food, and it's not just the type of food we eat. It is the way we consume our food that may be partially responsible for the heart attacks and strokes that we have. Getting back to your question, high fructose corn syrup, bad.
Mm-hmm.
Bad, bad, bad. You know, you can't limit it as a society. You can't put laws and say, this is bad. What you have to do is change the culture of the society so people read it and say, high fructose corn syrup, I'm not going to buy it. That's how you do it. But the reality is we have to begin to consider essentially get away from these highly sweet drinks culturally, make it something, oh, you're drinking that, I'm drinking, you know, seltzer water, I'm drinking plain water. That's what we have to do. But it's a problematic issue. Nobody's got a handle on this, and it's the issue of this millennium.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed Italy. I love Italy. I haven't been there in years. I love it.
Thanks for the call. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To Palatka, Florida we go now. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
What's up?
I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Both my mother and I have a sensitivity to milk and milk products. Our throat closes up and we experience nausea. We've always thought we were lactose intolerant. The odd thing, though, is that this sensitivity only occurs with whole or 2% milk, not with skim. We've both tried lactase drops, and they don't have any effect. I'd like to know, can people be allergic to milk fat as opposed to lactose?
Wow. That's very interesting. You're right. If you're lactose intolerant, tell me about ice cream.
Oh, yes, with especially her more so than I, but it will close up her throat. She'll get cramps and horrible.
Okay, how about frozen yogurt?
It depends. If it's non-fat frozen yogurt, it doesn't bother us.
Right.
But only if it's whole or anything made with whole milk.
That's interesting. So you're milk fat intolerant, because basically if you're lactose intolerant, which means you don't have enough lactase, which is an enzyme, and you take lactaide, which basically is the enzyme lactase, it's going to happen with skim milk and it's going to happen with ice cream and all dairy products. But clearly that is not what's happening to you. It's happening with the milk fat. How about butter?
Oh, butter's fine.
See, because butter is milk fat.
Yeah.
Well, that's odd, because we don't really use butter. We use, like, margarine.
Yeah, but if butter doesn't bother you, if you can put butter on a slice of bread, butter, not margarine, real butter,
you're having milk fat. This problem is really more so for her than I, but butter, she can't eat butter at all, but I'm okay with butter, but that may just be because I'm less affected by this, but...
Well, you must have some milk fat intolerance. That's the best thing that I can imagine. It must be some milk fat intolerance, and we develop these very individual food intolerances that we can't explain very well. You know, people will be intolerant of an apple, but they can eat a pear. Some people will be tolerant of, for instance, a raw apple, but they can eat a cooked apple. And so we don't really understand well where all food intolerances are. The fact that you can have butter means it's not just a pure fat intolerance, but your mother can't, so you, and you have obviously inherited this from your mother. So, well, that's okay. You won't get fat. Drink skim milk and have no fat, and have no fat ice cream and yogurt. But that's what it sounds like. It sounds like it might be a milk fat intolerance. So, how long have you had this?
Oh, since forever. Since I was like, whenever I was first switched off of formula, the doctors told her to give me whole milk, and I threw it up curdled. I couldn't keep it down, and she had to give me soy milk.
So this has been forever and forever. So have you ever tried tofu-y ice cream? It's made with tofu. It doesn't taste like tofu, Tom. Tom is giving me the thumbs down. As soon as I say tofu, Tom gives me the thumbs down. But it's called tofu-y. It's made. It is a kosher ice cream. It's not ice cream because you cannot have milk products within, if you keep kosher, within 2 hours of having meat.
Right.
And so they invented an ice cream-like product which is made of tofu. There's no dairy in it at all, and it's actually quite good. It's delicious, and I would try that out if you want to have something that tastes like ice cream that isn't. I got to bring some in for Tom. I'll have to bring some tofu to you.
Sure. I'll taste anything. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks. I'll try that.
Yeah. I think when we talk about milk intolerance or being allergic to milk, I always think of my Aunt Marie, may she rest in peace, who had was unable to eat any dairy products except, guess what?
Ice cream?
Yes.
Except ice cream. Got it. Good old Aunt Marie.
A quick question from our Zorba pastor on your health inbox, Zorba. This one from Kate in Madison, who writes, "Dear Zorba, while grocery shopping, I noticed that many packaged products like Cheetos have a label on the front of the bag that says, 'No trans fats.' Yet, the ingredients include hydrogenated oils. How can they say there's no trans fats?"
Because there are no trans fats. Trans fats are made often with hydrogenated oils. You can have an hydrogenated oil without trans fats, so they don't make them. In other words, when the Cheetos are made, Cheetos, of course, we know are not exactly a health food, but when the Cheetos are made, they're not made with trans fats. They may have hydrogenated oil. Hydrogenated oil is not the same as a trans fat. It's that trans fats are often made from hydrogenated oils, but this is what the food manufacturers are doing. They're trying to make junk food, which doesn't have trans fats, and that might be a healthier junk food. It's hard for me to get my mouth around that phrase.
Okay.
Let's make a healthier Cheeto? Really?
But
hey, it's America.
Yeah, but they're not Cheetoing on the label then.
No, Tom, they're not Cheetoing on the label.
We guarantee you that you can't get any trans fats by listening to Zorba Pastor on your health or by sending us your comments, questions, and tips. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have lots more coming, including the Medical Myth Buster and some interesting research, too. Your calls coming up, too, on Zorba Pastor on your health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number, if you want to talk with Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, the DEA is concerned about soft drink cough syrup mix.
Yeah,
apparently,
yeah,
kids
yeah,
are,
right.
Are doing this.
And actually, you know, this is nothing new. This is something
right.
that surfaces about every 5 to 10 years. Years ago, when I was in college, I remember there were kids who drank GI gin. That's what they talked about. And GI gin was terpenhydrate and codeine. You could buy it by signing on. This is a different variation of it. It's basically mixing codeine cough syrup with a sports drink. And it, you know, under these names, lean syrup, scissor, purple drink. bank, you know, all these, you know, these concoctions and names. And they're basically, it's not a small issue. It's a big issue because you can get codeine cough syrup in many places in the country by simply signing on. And you have young kids who are taking it, drinking it, and then often driving their car.
Well, you don't want young kids drinking bad stuff. Is this worse than, say, if kids were, you know, sneaking a beer or
a
mixed drink?
There are a lot of issues. First of all, sneaking a beer for a kid who's 15 or 16 is an issue, especially drinking the beer is one issue.
I'm saying it's okay. I'm saying, is this worse than that or the same as that?
I think it's much worse. I think it's much worse for a bunch of reasons. First of all, Every 5 or 10 years, glue sniffing comes up to the surface, and it often starts with things like this. And glue sniffing is a big issue. Now, the DEA is not worried that much about glue sniffing because it's on the wane, but every 5 or 10 years, it goes back up, and glue sniffing actually destroys brains. You know, that commercial on television, this is your, you know, your brain is like fried eggs. Glue sniffing is bad. But these cough syrups are bad. What happens is people make them, and then they sell them to kids for $12 to $24, you know, a bottle. And they'll say, here's some cough syrup. They're drinking it, and they may get high.
Cough syrup doesn't cost $12.
No, but they mix it, and then they sell it. This is something that
the kids mix up the drink,
right,
and then
they
sell
the drink.
They make
a sports drink, and so here it is. You're going to an event. You've got a sports drink, and you're drinking at an event. And, in fact, what you're doing is you're drinking codeine. And sometimes codeine in large amounts is not good for you.
Yeah, of course.
It causes side effects. It causes problems. People have allergies. And all of a sudden, they'll say, try this drink. And I'm against this. I think this is a
big issue. But you mentioned this, what you think leads to glue sniffing?
Well, the problem is with this particular type of behavior, that once you start using over-the-counter cough syrup, it tends to commingle with glue sniffing. So once, then this is how the last glue sniffing epidemic started. It started with cough syrup and moved over to glue sniffing, which is a big issue. And so I think that it's important to that cough syrup with codeine be behind the counter, that the pharmacist accounts for it, and that they consider whether or not they're going to give it to a young kid who asked for it. I think this cough syrup with codeine is a big issue.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi. Zorba, I have a question for you today about warts. Both of my daughters have warts on their fingers and on their knees. And of course, being teenagers, this is a big embarrassment for them. And my younger daughter was talking to a friend of hers who said she went to her family physician because she had warts. And she talked to her family physician, and he prescribed extra-strength Tagamet. And she took this prescription-strength Tagamet for approximately 3 months, and lo and behold, the warts disappeared. So I don't know if there's a connection between something we take. My dad used to take Tagamet for his ulcer, but I don't know if there's a connection between Tagamet working for an ulcer and working for warts. I wondered if you could shed some light on this for me.
Well, it's really kind of interesting. First of all, there are as many treatments for warts as there are warts in the world. There's many treatments. And warts are a viral infestation, basically, of the skin. They have a natural history of coming and then disappearing often after about a year and a half or 2 years. They come, they stay, and they disappear. And the body usually develops antibodies. That's the thought to the virus, and then the wart goes. And for some people, the warts tend to come in with some frequency. For other people, for instance, people who have HIV/AIDS can have great difficulty getting rid of warts because they have an immune problem. But for the vast majority, it comes and goes. And the old-fashioned treatment was something called white shake lotion. White shake lotion was white. It had nothing active in it, and people would rub it on the warts, and it would go away. That's what I was taught in medical school. And there's so many different things for warts in the complementary alternative literature, in the Tibetan literature, you know, going out in the moon and doing things. I've heard of the Tagamet cure. I've never used the Tagamet cure, and I don't know if the Tagamet cure works. I've never seen anything in the medical literature that says giving Tagamet, Zantac, a Pepcid, which are all the drugs in this class, will actually cure the warts. But hey, it's an easy thing to do. You double the over-the-counter strength, which is about the prescription strength that we would give, and it gets rid of the warts. And try it on your kids and see what happens. That's what I would do, because obviously they don't like these warts.
No, they don't. Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing for them being girls going to high.
Of course. Have they been frozen off or anything? Have they gone to the doctor to get...
Well, the older daughter has gone to a dermatologist, mm-hmm. and she has used Metaplast, which mm-hmm. has had fairly good effect.
Right. And metoplastin, all of these, they contain something called salicylic acid. And what they do is they chemically erode the top of the wart, and then you rub it off and you use that. And, of course, a very, very common treatment for warts is duct tape. You have to leave the duct tape on the wart, basically, for 6 weeks. Well, you can't do that on your fingers or on your hands. I mean, that's not possible. You can do it on your foot, but you can't do it on your fingers or your hands. So the metoplast, she uses at nighttime?
Yes, she does.
Yeah, these are all salicylic acid, which are sort of aspirin compounds that go on top of the wart, and they help. And you can have it cauterized with liquid nitrogen. Some people use heat. You can use some chemicals, white shake lotion, which, of course, does nothing but keeps you from doing other things. And Tagamet, hey, I tried it for my kids. Now, can you get your kids to take a pill twice a day?
Oh, yes, religiously, I'm sure. No problem about that. And I just wondered if – I just didn't – I thought, well, I want to be sure that this wouldn't be –
You will do yourself no harm by taking it. And if it works, you must call us back and let us know.
Oh, I promise I will.
Thank you.
And they will thank you, too.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. But now, Zorba,
have them call us back if it works. That's the way to do it.
Are we now encouraging a flood of email about wart cures? Because we've gone through this year after year on this
program. We haven't done our wart program yet. You know, the wart cures. Wart jokes, wart cures.
Let's discourage more wart cures.
Yes, there we go.
800-462-7413. Let's get into our medical myth buster. And I'm having a little difficulty reading the introduction to this myth. As you know, Zorba, Adam Friedrich, our producer, has turned the lights down in the studio. But today's myth appears to say that reading in the dark can damage your eyes.
Will damage your eyes.
Is this true?
That is absolutely false. That is an absolute myth, and it is not true, and it's amazing how widespread that myth is. But if you look at most ophthalmologists, they know,
if you strain your eyes to read in the dark.
Not at all. It does not damage your eyes. That is completely wrong. Now, we do know something very interesting. We know that people who read a lot, doctors, people who just read a lot of books, we'll say lawyers, editors, we know that they're more likely to have myopia and need glasses. In other words, they're more likely to need glasses. And if you don't read a lot, if you're in, we'll say, a country and you don't read very much, you're not as likely to need glasses. So we know that glasses are associated with reading a lot. But we also know that there is absolutely no association between reading in dark light and either the development of the need for glasses or damage to the retina. It doesn't happen. You know, if you read in dark light, you know, a little bit of light, it doesn't damage your eyes at all. It's mom's myth or dad's myth.
Well, this is bad news because the people at Zorba Pastor on Your Health are just as cheap as you are. That means they're going to save energy by reducing the light.
They're going to cut down the electricity.
Yeah.
That's exactly
right. They're also, you know, public radio people. They're very environmental, and they want to save energy.
They want to save, save that energy stuff.
So I'm going to have to read.
Now, we do know this. We know that if you read in very minimal light, it causes eye fatigue and headaches. So it's not a myth that says reading in a dark room will cause a headache or strain, but it will not damage your eyes. Pop that myth out.
But the suits don't care whether we get headaches or not.
Not at all. That's why they're going to turn down the light. And it's radio, so we just have to talk.
Anyway, your computer screen should provide you with enough light to send us an email with a myth you'd like Zorba to bust. Just send that email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And we have a listener with us now, Zorba, in Sheridan, Wyoming. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a question for Dr. Zorba about vitamins. A friend was recently visiting our house, and when I was taking vitamins, and he was looking at all the bottles, and then he got out this comparison chart that rated vitamins on points from 0 to 100. And we generally are frugal, like you say, NPR people, you know, and to buy the generic brand. And his chart shows all those as very poor quality, 5% and less. And amazingly enough, the one that he sells is for quite a bit of money is like 94%. And some other expensive brands were also high rated. And this chart was apparently created by eight groups of I don't know if it was doctors or not, but are the generic vitamins accessible, or had a person ought to buy the expensive ones?
Zorba, this is one of your favorite topics.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you make a chart, you sell your product. That's what they do. You make your chart and you say, hey, there are five societies that did this. You know, the Society for Vitamin Research and the Society for Nutrition and Health and all of these societies, you go back to them. They're not medical societies. They're not scientific societies. They're all branding societies who are selling their vitamins. And their goal is to get you to spend $25 to $30 a month versus $2 a month. Why?
Because $40
a month. And they want to show you, hey, this vitamin is 94% and I can show you this and that and it's hogwash. It's absolute hogwash. It is junk. It's garbage. It's not true. And I'm really, as you can tell, I feel strongly about this. If it says multivitamin with minerals, USP, U.S. Pharmacopeia, then it has to meet certain standards on how basically the vitamin leaches out of the pill. Now, some pills, when the vitamin leaches out, there's still a skeleton left, and you excrete that skeleton in your stool. So a lot of vitamin sellers say, well, look in the stool. You'll see the pills are still there whole. Well, the truth is the skeleton is there. The vitamins are out. As long as it meets the quality standards of the U.S. Pharmacopeia, it gets into your body. And basically, you know, $400 a month, so for $40 a month, so for basically, you know, $400 or $500 a year, you're going to spend a lot of money on vitamins. Forget it. If you want good vitamins, eat green leafy vegetables, eat apricots, eat nuts, eat fruits. Spend that $500 on really good fresh food or flash frozen food, and you'll get a lot more vitamins. And do not spend it at the vitamin store. As you can see, I'm very much against it. Because I think they sell
you're not
you bill
recommending
goods.
Against taking a multivitamin.
No. I think a multivitamin is – I now recommend that everyone take a multivitamin. Years ago, I didn't. I take a multivitamin, and I have to tell you, I take a cheap multivitamin. It costs me $10, $10 or $15 a year for my multivitamins, and I know scientifically they're working.
Well, I am glad to hear that because I'll continue my buying inexpensive vitamins.
Absolutely, and that's the public radio way.
Zorba, we'll see you next time.
Take care.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, our producer is available anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1020Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.